Mike Miller is an associate professor of economics at DePaul University. Welcome back, Mike. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, John. It's great to be with you.
Last time, you were just positively chipper. You were so cheerful about all the economic indicators. You still in a good mood, Mike?
Well, no. Last time we spoke, it was about the labor report, and there's been one since then. And the labor data is just stunningly good. Everything about it in terms of wages going up and people getting jobs and unemployment rate, and it's just fabulous. And then, of course, we said even at that time, the one bad thing in the economy is the price problem. And I really thought I was in the camp that believed this was going to be much more transitory than it's turned out to be. I thought it was going to be tied mainly to the supply chain problems and that those would have disappeared by now. But to my dismay, we have continual inflation. And the news, I look at the reports and look at some of the details, and I found nothing but bad news this time. Not only is the year-over-year data really bad, saying we have inflation of 7%, a huge jump from a year ago, but at the same time, if you look at it from month to month, you kind of hope that the increase will slow down, that prices will not be going up as fast from month to month as they did the month before. And no, it's going up just as fast. And lastly, when you look at the categories, every single category is showing inflation. I know a lot of people are focusing on cars, which of course is a problem, and food, which is a problem. But it's across the board. Just about every single category has price increases, which are substantial, and they're continuing. And this is definitely going to influence what the Fed's going to do next time they meet.
Is it possible to feel good about the economy without focusing on inflation? I saw Steve Chapman's piece in the paper the other day, Bad Feelings About a Good Economy, and he just ticked off one good thing about the economy after another. He mentioned inflation, but he was a lot rosier than you are.
Well, I'm actually, John, you asked about prices in particular, and that's a bad report. I'm one of these odd people. I'm an optimistic macroeconomist. I think I would go with Chapman. I think that there are a lot of good, solid things in the economy. Now, we do know that if wages are going up for the bottom of the labor force much faster than they are for the top, which is also very good news, it's just that the inflation is so bad temporarily that you can't take advantage of those gains. At least you're making some progress. So overall, if you ask me, is the economy doing well overall, I would agree with Chapman. And I'll tell you, the thing about inflation, it does no good for anyone. I mean, nobody gains except for people who owe money. But the unemployment is the ultimate measure of people's ability to deal with their economic needs. And when you have a very strong labor market like we do now, and people can find jobs and people can change jobs, that's a good thing. That overrides the inflation problems.
Oh, does it now? Because I was just about to ask if you feel, however good all that news is, the one that matters foremost is inflation. If you get a better job and you make more money, but you don't come away with more money, then what's the point?
Well, you do. There's two ways to look at it. One, in terms of meeting your day-to-day things like buying food, of course, you don't have as much money as you did before. But one thing is, for those of us, maybe that's you too, we owe money, like on a mortgage or a car payment or something like that. Those payments are fixed. And as our incomes rise nominally, as we get these larger raises and so forth, and we do have more cash flow, it makes it easier to meet those particular debts. That's why inflation is good for people who borrow, and it's bad for people who lend. So if there is only one, there is one positive side to inflation, and that is that it's good for people who borrow. But it doesn't really make it. It doesn't make us better off on the whole. But without jobs, you got nothing. So if I had to take the two ills of the economy, inflation or unemployment, I would much rather have inflation than unemployment. Of course, I'd rather have no inflation and low unemployment, but
can't hit that. I'm intrigued by that pearl of wisdom that inflation is good for people who borrow and bad for people who lend. We got a lot of folks listening who have car loans or mortgages, and as much as the media, because it's their job, continues to trumpet how bad inflation is, that's just an interesting little slice of perspective. We've been talking about this latest report, what inflation means to the average American, and you were reminding us that if you are borrowing, at least those returns, the what you owe is fixed. So if you make a little more money, you are at least in relation to that loan coming out ahead, right?
That's correct. So what will happen is when we have higher inflation, workers, they don't cause the inflation. They have to catch up. And what employers will have to pay us more or we'll go somewhere else. So as our wages go up in what we call nominal dollars, dollars unadjusted for inflation, our debts like a car payment or a mortgage or a student loan payment, they remain fixed. And therefore, the amount of cash flow that you have relative to your debt, the cash flow rises. And that makes it easier for you to pay off these loans. You're paying with dollars which are worth less than they were worth when you used the dollars, when you borrowed them. And that's why lenders are in trouble, of course. They lent this to us, and then they're hoping to get back money that they will use to buy stuff.
Yeah.
But the dollars we give them can't buy as much because of the inflation. So lenders are hurt, and borrowers are helped.
Speaking of borrowing and paying back, what are you hearing about student loans these days?
You know, as a family who had to deal with a student loan, it's always an issue. But, you know, student loans today are not like they were when I graduated from college in 1975. The amount we had to borrow back then because college was not nearly as expensive relative to other expenditures. What we see today is that people are not getting jobs which are generating the incomes necessary to pay off these loans easily. So a lot of politicians have said what we would like to do is maybe forgive some of those loans and pay them off for the students. And I understand the desire to do this. It would free up some cash flow, again, for those students who no longer have to make those monthly payments. But some of it was also done to say it would be helpful for poor people, and it would help the black-white gap in terms of wealth. And so economists, of course, when we hear something like that, we immediately start to do research to figure out, is this in fact true? And some economists have looked at this very closely, and it seems pretty clear that the people who will benefit if there is an across-the-board forgiveness of college loans will be people in the upper classes, not lower class people, not lower income people. And it will do absolutely nothing, from what they can tell, to the wealth gap between white and black families. So it is people who are well off who borrow more money to go to private schools or better schools. They owe more money, and therefore when that money is forgiven, they will have more of the benefit. And so if they're going to do this, there's always that fairness question, but if they're going to do this, they should be very careful to target the forgiveness mm-hmm. for those at the bottom who have, you know, they maybe got the least out of it. They weren't able to finish college or something like that. But across the board, forgiveness of student loans is not going to have a distributional effect that people like.
Well, that whole concept will always have this sort of ethical baggage anyway of I paid my loan. If you borrow money, you have an obligation to pay it back, and that it's difficult or inconvenient is not a good excuse. You don't get away with that with your house or your car, so why should you with the student loan? I know that this is mentally in a different box for some people, but I wonder if you would comment on this, regardless of the black-white fairness issue that you just addressed. Would it at least be good for the economy in that now people have more money to spend on cars and groceries and sneakers, and that money would be put back into play rather than just paying off debt?
I'm going to give you a traditional economist answer, yes and no. It clearly would free up these monthly payments, but these monthly payments for most students who borrowed are a couple of $100s. So if you owe $30,000, you don't get $30,000. The only change in your monthly behavior is that you would have those extra couple $100s to spend. Now, we economists have also tried to figure out, have these loans had effects upon, for example, family formation and purchase by young people of their first home? And the answer is yes, and it's all been negative.
Really?
So there is some belief that if we could get this student loan burden off of a lot of these younger people, they could begin home, household formation and having children sooner, because they will have fewer debt they have to deal with, fewer dollars.
Pardon me, so you're saying it would have that impact? They would buy homes.
Yes.
They would start families sooner. Yeah.
There is some belief that it's a counterfactual in the sense that we believe that some of the lack of family formation, which has been put off longer and longer, and the lack of young people buying homes is in part due to these student loans. Because you go to, it actually happened in my family. My son and daughter-in-law went to buy a kid a mortgage, and my son's college loan, it was one reason they couldn't do it. It was a burden. It was, he making the payments, but it's kept him from getting a reasonable mortgage. And so we helped pay it off so he could take care of that problem. Yeah. So I know that's only anecdotal, but economists have found that appears to be the case in terms, again, of purchase of homes and family formation, both of which, by the way, as you know, are very good for society.
The scenario you described is very common. I'm also thinking that maybe a couple hundred dollars here, a couple hundred dollars there, maybe it does help somebody buy a home or alleviate some of the pressure of their day-to-day life. I understand that it's not $30,000, it's $200. But if I save $200 and you save $200 and they save $200, suddenly the economy benefits. It's sort of like the argument J.B. Pritzker is making. I know he's running for re-election, so he's dangling some tax forgiveness and some delays of some fees. And the Tribune had a big story last Sunday saying, well, this doesn't amount to very much for an average family. And I thought, no, but in mass, it'll help the state. I wonder if you would comment on that sort of math.
Yeah, it does, because that's the difference between what we would say in econ, the micro and the macro. The micro effects could be small for each individual unit, but when you add them all together, you do get this large macro effect. And so your reading of that, I believe, is correct. And think of it again. I know it only frees up $200 of cash in a monthly payment, but if I do remove $30,000 worth of debt, that gives you so much more room to borrow money for things like a house, which, of course, like I say, there's all kinds of evidence that family formation and home ownership are very stabilizing for society. They're very good for society.
So if we could target it, Mike,
to get those,
If we could target it, would you then advocate for student loan forgiveness?
If it could be targeted, yes, you think about the people at the top. I mean, this sounds terrible. They go to the better schools. They get the better jobs. They earn the better money. And the people at the bottom, of course, in many cases went to school and because of other problems had to leave school and therefore have student loans and no degree in hand. So if we could target it to those who were, say, misled by private colleges, or those who tried hard and made payments, but they're really behind, but because they're low income, if we could target it, I would be much more in favor of it. There's still the fairness question, like you say.
Yes, well, because I'm thinking of those people who busted their butt and paid off their loans and worked their asses off, and now they are having a better life, and now they have to subsidize people who didn't. I mean, that's also part of what would happen.
That's the big rub. There is that really big fairness question. And even, again, anecdotally, my wife and I went to great lengths to pay off my son's. We could have, let it go out the full 25 years if we wanted to, but it was better for us as a family to not do it that way.
Yeah,
and then to know that if I had just waited 2 or 3 years, I could have had the whole thing forgiven. It's kind of aggravating.
Know. Yeah. Now, there's a line in a movie and the mother screams at the kid, I could have had a lake house.
That's right.
It's 12:28. Michael, it's always a pleasure. I'm going to take one of your classes one of these days. I think I'd learn a lot. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
You got it, John. I enjoy this very much as well. Thank you.
Mark Rickmeyer joins us, too. He's the CEO of Table XI, a Chicago strategy and product innovation firm that just announced a new advisory board. We'll talk about that in just a second. Mark, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Tell us what Table XI does. What do you guys do?
Table XI is a product innovation firm, which is a fancy way of saying we help our clients both think through new opportunities to create products for them, so digital products like mobile applications, web applications, chatbots, and things like that, and then have the software engineering teams that can help bring those ideas to life and create new opportunities for them to grow and scale their businesses.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah. So we've been working, especially in the Chicago market, with companies like Tyson and the American Medical Association, Dixon, helping to create for like in the Field Museum, like lots of technology-based applications that have helped them either engage their users or grow new opportunities. And it's actually been interesting seeing that scale across, you know, not just in the healthcare space or the ed tech space. So sometimes you're building an app to help kids learn in child literacy, or sometimes you're helping AccuWeather to build a new weather tracking mobile application. It's interesting the kind of diverse portfolio we get to work in.
Yeah, I wondered if your business would have existed without smartphones and apps. Is it about that?
A lot of it changed, I would say, in 2011, as that rise of mobility became more and more important. You know, the first 10 years was probably more focused on the web and web applications. But as you started having responsive design and, of course, the rise of mobility and iPads and then wearables, you started seeing a much bigger increase in the mobile space. So I think both are true.
Yeah. And does everything at TableXI exist in a digital space? You're not helping grocery stores make new grocery carts that are more efficient, do you?
No, it's more in the physical space, or the digital space. Although some of our most interesting projects are what in that kind of IoT space, where you have a physical piece of hardware that is interacting with, let's say, a mobile app. So you're controlling hardware through a digital application. So those are really fun, where you get to have that kind of impact too.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm intrigued. I want to work for you, and I don't even know what I'm talking about. But that does sound interesting. Now, you guys just announced an advisory board with leaders in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. What's this all about?
So this is an interesting milestone for us. We just hit 20 years, and we've been thinking about how do we want to intentionally shape and grow our company as we grow. The opportunity to bring in these kinds of folks to help our leaders see around corners and think about where the opportunities are for our business was one thing we really wanted to invest in the growth of our leadership team. And bringing in these kinds of minds were really important to us. I think the interesting thing that we've been seeing about how do you grow a resilient business, while you certainly focus on market opportunities and go-to-market strategies, a big thing for us has been, especially now in the wave of the Great Resignation and trying to make sure you have the best employee experience as possible, we've been really thinking about how do we both improve the diversity of our company, but also thinking about how that kind of change in our company makeup leads to a more profitable and the higher retention and a more resilient business. So these advisory members have been helping us think through all kinds of manners of our growth and how we can continue to provide service to our customers. But a big part of it has been thinking about how do we shape and refine the employee experience? How do we make TableXI the best destination employer that we can?
So diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, team building, culture building, design thinking, change management. You know, this almost sounds to me like getting in front of a lot of problems that companies are running into these days. Oh, that, and I'll just pick them in the news. Any of the big stay-at-home companies, any of these digital companies, they all seem to run into issues either with their employees or a video somebody posted. I wonder if you're trying to get in front of that. Is that part of what this is?
So there are two different kinds of changes hitting businesses right now. There are the kinds that are happening to you. So when COVID things happen, you have companies that were never really thinking about how to be remote first or how to be able to maintain culture when people aren't, face to face. And those are things that everyone's trying to grapple with and think about. What is the meaning of physical space and how much do I want to be spending on rent? But the other kinds of change are the ones we've been thinking about around how do we want to change our own culture and how do we want to invest in that? And honestly, for us, it started in 2014, not out of an external factor, but some internal ones. And it was a bit of a sad story, actually. We had a number of people leave the company all around the same time, and each one was individually explainable. Like one person wanted to get their MBA, and one person wanted to move across the country, and one person wanted to join a startup with their best friend. But all four of them were women, and it was all around the same time that they were leaving. And it caused us to sit back and think, is there something going on? Is there a part, maybe we have some blinders or some blind spots, or is there a part of our company culture that we overlook? And so we brought in an external person, a third party, to come in and do a culture audit, something I had never thought about doing. And it exposed some really interesting blind spots around how we were growing and promoting people, how are we supporting people, and it's led towards this internal focus will be called DEIB, or Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging. So for the last 7 years, have been trying to think about how we grow people, how we support people, and changing a lot of the ways we do things that we can hire and promote and retain all kinds of people and not just affluent, straight, white men, so to speak, yeah. Which is predominantly what you see in the tech industry.
Well, now I really want to work for your company. And it seems to me like one of the keys to all of this of late has been the freedom that employees must really feel to communicate. I've thought about what happened at the Blackhawks town hall meeting recently. I thought about what's happening at Spotify. I thought about what's happening at businesses big and small, far and wide. And I think that if employees don't feel sufficiently empowered or comfortable to communicate what they're feeling or what they need, then you've got these little time bombs. You've got these potholes that are going to pop up. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. I mean, and it's interesting. Even in Chicago, there are some great homegrown examples where there are companies who took the very opposite psychological approach and said, these are not topics to discuss at work. You know, at work, we only talk about work things. And so if you want to talk about anything else, you don't do it here. And that really frustrated and limited the opportunity for the company to challenge its own culture and to think about ways they could make it a more inclusive place for all employees. And so, you know, what happens is they leave in droves. If you really want to think about retention, and especially in a market where recruiting right now is harder and more aggressive than I've ever seen, retention is a really important number. And you think about, how do I build a really resilient business, is you lean into those uncomfortable conversations. And you have to think about, what is the right way for us to intentionally invest in our culture to make it a better place, you know, for everyone? Because ultimately, when you think, we are building mobile applications and chatbots and web applications for everyone, not just white folks like me and straight folks. You need to think about everyone who uses a product and think about the best way to build them. There is no doubt in my mind that the increases we've had in profitability and revenue are a direct correlation to the improvements we've made in our culture by making it a more diverse company and a more equitable company.
Mark Rickmeyer is the CEO of Table XI. XI, the letter X, the letter I, looks like 11, a Chicago strategy and product innovation firm. TableXI.com is the website. Fascinating stuff, Mark. Thanks for joining us today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:44. You betcha on WGN Radio, and we've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Home builders in the Chicago area sold more newly built homes in 2021 than in any year since 2008. The data comes from Tracy Cross and Associates in Schaumburg, a consultancy that tracks new home sales. Cranes reports developers sold nearly 5,400 new homes, townhomes, and condos in the Chicago area last year. It's the first time sales crossed the 5,000 mark since 2008. The median price of single-family homes was also up for both existing and new homes. The median price for all homes sold in 2021 was up almost 12% from the year before. A Chicago startup that provides robots to manufacturers has raised $26.5 million in new funding. Chicago Inno reports Formic Technologies raised the cash in a Series A equity round led by Lux Capital. The financing values the company at more than $100 million. It plans to use the capital to help more businesses build out their automation using the company's robots as a service. Formic delivers fully functioning robotic solutions to companies who pay by the hour for their usage. It saves those companies the cost of owning, programming, installing, and maintaining those robots. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, Steve Alexander.
Chicago has a lot of nicknames, John. My favorite is Candy Capital of the World. And what better time than Valentine's Day weekend to shine a light on one of the city's many iconic candy makers, and there are a bunch of them. Chad Womack works at this one.
I'm the marketing director for seasonal confections at Ferrara Candy Company.
Chad says as big as Valentine's Day is, it is barely in the top four candy holidays.
Halloween by far is the largest.
And when it comes to Valentine's Day at Ferrara Candy?
We always love our tried and true Brock's Conversation Hearts.
Yeah, those are those tiny, chalky-tasting hearts that have Be Mine and Kiss Me and things like that printed on them. Have you ever wondered how they print those?
It's a fascinating manufacturing process. The main ingredients are sugar and corn syrup that makes a dough that we then extrude. And we actually print on this giant sheet of dough just a whole bunch of the sayings and then cut the heart shapes around that and then heat them. Basically, you're baking them. And then we mix them up with our flavors and bag them and get them to the nearest stores.
Ferrara is also running a Valentine's contest with its Fun Dip product, where you can guess the Fun Dip mystery flavor.
So you can actually go to solvethefundipmystery.com and enter what you think the new flavor is, the mystery flavor, and you have a chance to win some money.
Ferrara Candy has been in business in Chicago since 1908, and I doubt in all that time there has been a more meaningful product than Lemon Heads. And that's because of something discovered by Immerman's Angels, a charity supporting cancer patients.
They actually found the insight that when cancer patients were undergoing chemotherapy, Lemon Heads helped offset that metallic taste of the chemo. So we partner with them and we donate product that they then share with chemotherapy centers around the country.
How about that? Chad Womack of Ferrara Candy Company. And speaking of candy, I don't think Ferrara makes these, but today is National Peppermint Patty Day. It's also, from our dairy friends, Don't Cry Over Spilled Milk Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Vince Reyes, the hotel manager at Peninsula Hotel Chicago, just named once again by U.S. News and World Report as the best hotel in America. 6,000 hotels in that category. This is number one. Also rated the most romantic hotel in the United States. Vince, welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Did I miss any other accolades, or is that pretty much cover it?
I think that pretty much covers it. I mean, those two, especially being ranked number one, that for us is a huge accomplishment. You know, over the past decade here at the Peninsula Chicago, we've been number two or number three. We've been tossing back and forth, but it's actually the first time we've been awarded that number one spot. So it feels great.
It's funny because I knew you were always in that conversation, but this is the first time number one. And does that mean number one for the previous year, for 2021?
That's correct. It's for the previous year.
Which, what I would imagine, would have been maybe one of the most difficult years ever to be in the hotel business, maybe second only to 2020. What's it been like the last couple of years?
You know, I think it's the last 2 years in particular, it definitely has been challenging, and I think that goes for any industry. You know, when COVID hit, people had to figure out how to work around things and how to operate for the future. But more so for last year, you know, a lot of guests that traveled into Chicago that we got to welcome here in our hotel, they haven't traveled, you know, for over a year. They didn't see family members for over a year. They missed out traditions that they would normally have, like Christmas and Thanksgiving. They missed out on anniversaries and celebrations, and everyone struggled with that first year of COVID. So having this little vacation and coming to their little oasis here in the hotel put a lot of creative things on our end. You know, we really wanted to make sure we were creating magical moments and memories for them, because we knew that everyone had a very difficult time with COVID, and that this would be their little oasis, their little slice of heaven. And for us, you know, we got together and started thinking about, okay, what else can we do? You know, it's easy to just put a birthday cake and call it a day, but, you know, how can we connect with them on a very different level, just because it was such a hard year for everybody?
I know you guys have some Valentine's Day specials. Just give me a highlight or two. If I come in February or I guess this weekend, what have you got cooking?
So Valentine's Day, like, as you mentioned, we were announced as the most romantic hotel in Chicago. So we've got a few things lined up. We have a package and promotion going on right now for some of our rooms. It's called Celebrate Romance. We also have something in our Z Bar rooftop bar, a proposal experience. For those that have yet to plan their proposal and are interested in doing it, we have something called Rosé and Roses. So we're going to basically decorate a whole private room out. We'll have the finest champagne and caviar all laid out. We also have a lobby restaurant dinner, which is going to be opened. We have our afternoon tea, our Valentine's Day afternoon tea, which is always a big signature and a tradition here. And then we have one of our extravagant packages called the Penultimate. It's $100,000. It's two nights in our Peninsula Suite. We partner with two of our very good partners, Cindy Garber, who's handcrafted ruby feather earrings, and then we also partnered with Kriegler, who's got a very exclusive crystal perfume bottle all lined up there too.
I suppose something like that is branding. Or do people actually spend $100,000 on that?
You know, we always think it's branding, but from time to time, there actually are guests that inquire about it. You know, staying in the Peninsula Suite and having all of these custom experiences, amenities, is something that sometimes people value. So I know the number does seem like it's quite out there, but we do get a lot of requests and inquiries about it.
Well, if you can get it, more power to you. You can stay at Peninsula Chicago, though, for less. This is the best hotel in America and the most romantic. So even if you're not there this weekend, I would keep that in mind. Vince Reyes is the hotel manager. Peninsula.com is the website. And Vince, congratulations. Thanks for keeping Chicago on the map. Well done.
Well, it's a testament to our staff, and really we couldn't have done it without the city of Chicago. You know, for us, the award is to us, but, you know, really in essence, it's really going back to our team here in the hotel, and really it's something to celebrate for Chicago too. So,
nicely done. Okay, we'll visit again. Thanks, Vince.
Thank you so much.